It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome back to another episode of Red Tinted Glasses, and I'm delighted at short notice to be disjoined, God, I'll get my words out eventually, by the host of the Late Kickoff podcast, Jamie Guyon. Jamie, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me on, Glenn. Absolute pleasure. Delighted to make my RTG debut.
Yeah, and in ahead of such a big game on Thursday night as well, and we're recording this on Tuesday lunchtime, and on Tuesday morning, Aberdeen's 12th summer signing of the season was announced as Pappy Habib Gaye joined the club from KV Kortrijk, if I get that correctly. Quite mental that the rumour seems to be the fee we've paid is nearly $500,000, quite a lot of money. But Jamie, I don't really see this as being a direct replacement for Dukowski, as many people might start panicking on social media. I see this as more of an addition, or maybe preparation for losing one of them, maybe in a 6 months or next summer.
Yeah, I think I've read it in the same way, that we're going to be playing a lot of games this week, irrespective of how Thursday goes. We're going to have a group stage, so you know that's six games extra between now and Christmas, a lot of Thursday, Sunday. So I think it's actually quite good to see that we're developing a squad. I think we need a bit of depth up front if anything happened to either Bojan or Duke, God forbid, then yeah, we might be in a bit of a sticky wicket. We haven't seen a huge amount of Ester Sokler yet, but I don't think it's to replace him or to suggest that he isn't quite up to it or anything like that. I think we just need bodies, and particularly at that end of the pitch. And we know Duke can play wide or through the middle as well. So it maybe gives us a little bit more options to change things in game when it's not quite working out as well, which is, it's nice to see. I can't tell you the last time I remember Aberdeen having four out and out strikers, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, I know. I think that's actually a really good point in terms of Duke's positioning. He might get moved out to more of a winger. I know there's been a lot of kind of comments on his early season form. But looking at Pat just now, kind of, we're not going to sit here and pretend we know the ins and outs of his ability. A quick Instagram scroll, he kindly produced his own highlight reel on his Instagram. So for those of you wanting to go and check that out, he's got the Kortrijk story, which shows a lot of his goals and assists. I know he was out for 6 months in 2022 with some form of injury, but from the clips that I saw on his Instagram, he looks really direct, offers a lot of pace and good in the air as well, Jamie. So maybe a bit like Duke himself, but it looks a very physical presence, which again offers us something different both on the European and domestic stage.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're going to come across big, strong centre-backs domestically, and if last Thursday's anything to go by, we're going to come across some big, strong centre-backs on the continent as well. And for all that Bojan does offer, I don't think he is necessarily a hugely physical presence, despite maybe his height, but to bring somebody else in with a bit of pace and a bit of power, we've seen plenty of examples in the Scottish Premiership over the last few seasons where a combination of pace and power can be pretty effective. So I think that's really exciting. A guy that's decent in the air and happy to throw himself about. I always worry when somebody puts together their own highlights reel, because I reckon if I put together my own highlights reel, I'd look pretty good as well. But his goal scoring record looks pretty decent. Rumour has it Watford were in for him for triple what we've paid for him only 12 months ago. Perhaps the injury is what's put some people off, but I'm so used to looking at a potential Dawn striker having scored seven goals in 142 League One appearances. So to see a guy with, you know, decent numbers there is quite exciting. And he seems to come with a good song as well. So that's also exciting.
Yeah, exactly.
That's That's what we need with Ojo and Ramirez having gone. We need a player with a good song.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Monday, Tuesday, Habib Gay. That's sure the one. I'm sure ringing round the terraces, and people would have been disappointed if I didn't back that up after you teed up for me. But yeah, 14 goals in 57 games at Kortrijk, 25 and 55 at Aalesund in Norway. So a decent return, and looking forward to seeing how he hits the ground running at Aberdeen. And certainly, Jamie, going by what we saw on Sunday, we need someone that can offer something different up top, but wasn't really just up top where we struggled on Sunday. It was all over the pitch as the Dons backed up a 2-2 draw in Sweden with a 2-2 draw in Paisley. It was double Desmond. And it was two changes to the starting 11 for the game. Johnny Hayes replacing Ryan Duncan at left wing back, and Angus McDonald coming in for his first start of the season, replacing Shaden Morris, which allowed Nicky Devlin to go to maybe a more natural side at right wing back. Were you surprised, Jamie, that we only made the two changes? Because we discussed on the podcast after the first leg that maybe it was too soon to ring the changes as such.
Yeah, possibly. I was a little bit surprised to not see either of the J-Mix in the starting lineup, McGarry or McGrath. I thought they both impressed quite so much when they came on in Sweden that I thought one of them would get the run out from the start here. But that's potentially a fitness thing, and it's difficult to know that. Sitting in your own house trying to tell Barry Robson what to do with this lineup. But yeah, a little bit surprised. And had we been playing really well, I could see the logic in not wanting to rock the boat a bit too much. But I don't think there's any Dons fans out there that would suggest we've been playing too well so far this season. No. So maybe it did need shaking up a little bit more. And I think perhaps the way the game went kind of proved that as well.
Yeah, we haven't exactly been setting the heather on fire away from home, certainly. And although I know a lot of people maybe say the last 20 minutes in Gothenburg last Thursday was probably our best showing away from home, but Livingston, Stirling and St Mirren have all been pretty painful viewing so far. And I guess, for me, that first 45, obviously we go in at half-time 1-0 up in, I mean, the strangest and most fortuitous of circumstances, but in terms of how the game played out, there was maybe a bit of an overreaction. I certainly wasn't overly surprised at St Mirren kind of coming out and trying to get at us in the early stages, probably exploit that playing on the Thursday night and having to travel back. The only thing that was frustrating me was we could hardly string a pass together.
Yeah, I just thought we were awful. I was getting so frustrated. We couldn't keep the ball, which was actually reminiscent of Thursday. There was big spells in that first half on Thursday where you just wanted somebody to just get their foot on the ball and string together 5 to 10 passes and everybody just calmed down a little bit. I think there's been a lot of people super impressed with Dante Polvara since he's come back in this season. I've been sceptical, and I think I said on Twitter on Sunday during the game that I think he's a lot better than he was. But that wasn't an overly high threshold for him to surpass. And being better than an American college player doesn't necessarily make you good enough week in, week out. And he's one of those players, and I think we've had loads of these in the past. Rob Milsom springs to mind immediately as guys that don't necessarily do anything wrong. So he doesn't make an obvious mistake in the game that you can pin on him and be like, look at that, Pavara's made a clanger. But I don't think he really brings anything. He doesn't quite have the, for me at this stage in his career, the ability to sort of start commanding a game alongside, say, Shinney and Clarkson. Clarkson's been struggling to get into games, but I think he clearly benefited from Ramadani last year as that sort of commanding presence in the middle of the park, which is what I'm gathering we want from Polvara, but I don't think it's quite working so far. And if we had had the squad depth, I'd quite like to have seen Dante go on loan to a lower Premiership team or a higher Championship team and just get 90 minutes every week in Scotland and just get used to the game a bit more. But yeah, I think that's kind of coming through. For me, that was the problem in Haken, against Haken, sorry, in Gothenburg. And the problem on Sunday as well, that we just, like you say, we couldn't keep the ball. We don't have much of an outlet up front, it seems, at the moment. Neither Duke or Miofsky are hugely in form, say, for 20 minutes in Gothenburg. And yeah, it was frustrating. Like you say, we went in fortuitously ahead, and very much so should have been going in behind, in my view.
Yeah, exactly. Probably should have been going in behind. Kieran Backus having a goal disallowed rightly by VAR, one of five calls that VAR was involved in at the weekend. Nicky Devlin, I remember, I don't think he probably knew much about it at the time, an effort off the line as well, but there was a lot of times in that first half that we were really kind of backs against the wall, and I just wondered how kind of stubborn Barry was going to be in terms of changing it. But I just want to go back to that point that you made about Dante Pulvar, and it's a really interesting point, kind of about how we maybe view him in terms of a Ramadani replacement. And I think, you know, kind of the point that you made about what he offers is he's decent, but maybe not elevating on to that next stage is a very fair summary, and kind of maybe how the other players around him are struggling, because Leighton Clarkson was a player on Sunday that I picked up as struggling in recent weeks. I don't know if he's maybe not sure what he's supposed to be doing in this team, but I thought on Thursday and again on Sunday, once Jamie McGrath kind of came on, he looked a lot more lively, a bit more imposed. So I don't know if the likes of both Graham Shinney and Leighton are having to do a bit of extra work for Dante when previous seasons, well, last season anyway, under when we had Yilber in the team, they knew that he was comfortable doing that dirty side.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair assessment. I think Ramadani had his doubters, and that always really surprised me. I didn't really understand why. And it's maybe one of those careful what you wish for the people that did doubt him now that he's gone, or you don't know what you've got till it's gone, whichever cliche you want to use. But I think we're really noticing the size of presence that he had in that team, because we do really seem to be missing him in the middle of the park. And like I say, Dante, he doesn't make mistakes, but he doesn't take us, he doesn't elevate us, he doesn't take us to another level. And maybe Clarkson and Shinney don't, like you say, don't trust him quite enough, and are maybe sitting back a bit more, or maybe Clarkson's not taking the risky sort of 60% chance pass that he might have done last season, because he's thinking about the transition. Because Dante seems to be in games, you know, he's around, he's getting the ball, he's involved. But I think I was trying to think of a good comparison for him, and for whatever reason, Rob Milson was the one that stuck out in my mind. It's just a guy that, like, sort of flattered to deceive a little bit. I don't remember Rob Milson ever doing anything wrong, just also never really did anything particularly interesting either. I think we're really seeing the difference from losing a Ramadani. And I don't think we've got a replacement. I don't think McGrath's going to do what Ramadani did, even though he's maybe a better all-round footballer than Povara is. And we don't really seem to be in the market for a Ramadani replacement, or certainly not as far as I can see.
No, and that's maybe one of the bits of transfer business that the club is kind of keeping quiet just now. Obviously, the 12th summer signing arrived, could 13 be lucky or unlucky for us? And I guess I'm kind of interested to kind of see what we get from a Ramadani replacement as such. And I guess we kind of need that person in midfield to really come in and do the dirty work that the Ramadani did. Kind of going back to the point on Dante, is he does the bare minimum in that, but he's not kind of elevating us forward. But I think what we saw on Thursday from him, we did see him in a more progressive area, but I'm yet to kind of see him do the down and dirty defensive side of things that Yilber wasn't afraid to do, and maybe rough a few people up and kind of cause that kind of issue in midfield.
Yeah, and I'm more than happy for Dante to remain in the team and be a substitute for Leighton Clarkson, say, with 15 minutes to go, and to come on. And, you know, he's a big lad. You know, put him in that attacking position when we're ahead, and just ask him to sort of run around and keep the ball and keep things ticking over. And that's great. And I think what would be positive for Dante is we've seen how much he's progressed in the last 12 months. You know, the guy was was miles off of it 12 months ago. And I think most people thought he didn't have a career with Aberdeen. I think what we're seeing now is that he quite possibly does have a career with Aberdeen. He just needs to keep developing. And if he keeps developing at the rate that he has over the last 12 months, then, you know, by this time next season, we could have a world beater on our hands. And that's really exciting. But I just don't think he's the answer. And he's playing in such an important position in the team. And in Barry's formation as well, with this sort of 5-3-2 that he seems pretty wedded to at the moment, it makes the wing backs really important for creativity, but then that means that the person playing Dante's role is super important for protecting the back three, particularly when we're not hugely graced with pace. That was hard to say in the back three. You know, McDonald, for his positives, is by no means quick. I haven't seen anything from Ruby to suggest that he's got a turn of pace, and you know, Jensen, we'll wait and see. I think it does make him really important, and I hope that it's a case of the club keeping their cards close to their chest and that they've got somebody in mind, because you look around the rest of the pitch and you wonder why we're playing so badly. There's been a lot of complaints about our defence, but actually, in a lot of games, the defence has done pretty well. Defence hasn't done brilliantly, but it's not like we're conceding loads of goals by defence. Silly defensive mistakes, Nicky Devlin against Celtic aside. You know, it's not the calamitous mistakes we had this time last year. Far from it. And we've got Shinny, we've got Clarkson, we've got Duke, we've got Miofsky. So you're like, where's it going wrong? Why is it not all being stitched together? And I think it is in that Polvara role. And I just, guys like him are few and far, Ramadanis that is, are generally few and far between. So I hope that we haven't been caught napping with him being sold, and that, you know, with the few weeks that we've got left, that there's somebody that can come in. I don't know, is Ross Toakley still on the go? We were linked to him for about 5 years, so
I think he's busy assaulting people in the Highland League on a weekly basis just now.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
But a point you made there is a point that Callum messaged me at full time on Sunday, so it feels worthwhile bringing up. Kind of about the formation, you know, with the back five and three in the middle. Callum kind of wonders, and I wonder if you think the same, if the back five is slightly hindering us at time, and if Barry needs to be almost reluctant to, or willing, I should maybe say, to change that back five to a back four in certain situations, because if teams are kind of maybe camped in against us or looking to exploit weaknesses in our side, we don't seem to be willing to change our formation to counter what teams are doing to us at this moment in time.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I think the back five was born out of adversity last season, where we needed just to shut up shop. You know, we conceded 11 goals in Edinburgh in 7 days. So, you know, we absolutely needed to do something about it in the back five. Worked, and it allowed a couple of players to, you know, be better versions of themselves in that back five as well. But so far this season, I do agree that it seems to be hampering us a bit. I think there's a disconnect between the midfield and Duke and Miofsky, which we're struggling with. I think there's a lot of comments on Sunday that what's the point in having Leighton Clarkson if the ball gets pumped over the top of him for most of the game? And I think that's born out of the back five. The only rebuttal I would have is that we haven't seen McGarry and Devlin play in those wing-back roles together for a prolonged period yet. Mm-hmm. I think we're already getting signs of Devlin being a much better player at right wing-back than he is at right centre-back, which is fantastic. And then McGarry for 20 minutes against BK Hacken looked absolutely phenomenal. And so perhaps we'll get more creativity from those two if they're playing together in a back five. And that'll help solve some of our issues, and that they can, you know, they can play with Clarkson a bit further up the field. They both, on the face of it, appear to have the physicality to get up and down for the vast majority of the game as well. So the only reason I would be fine with Barry sticking it out for another sort of month or so is to give those two a run in that position and to see what difference that makes, and putting in decent crosses and stuff as well. But I do agree that we seem particularly wedded to it, and we are meant to be the sort of top three, four teams in the country, which means the vast majority of games we play in, the onus is going to be on us to be more creative and be more on the front foot. And generally a back five doesn't lend itself particularly well to be being the dominant team within the game. So it'd be nice. Sunday probably wasn't necessarily the right time for it, but it would be nice, perhaps even against Hibs this weekend, that if he just showed a little bit of willingness at the moment until the team is fully settled, to try a back four and see how we get on. I guess part of the issue now as well is we've got about nine centre-backs, so try to get them all into the team if there's only two playing could cause some issues. But I think we've seen from him last season, Robson seemed to be a manager that was happy to change things. And quite a lot of his early interviews when he took the role was, we seen it wasn't quite working, so we moved Clarkson to this position and we moved Ramadani further forward, or, you know, we changed something in the back and it seemed to unlock the door for us. And this season he seems, you know, super reluctant to make substitutions. He's, you know, before Gothenburg, he hardly had made any, and reluctant to change the system. Not entirely sure why that is, and hopefully it's a case of it being early in the season, because I think in Scotland in particular, where games tend to follow a bit of a formula, that if you're able to chuck something in there and change it up a bit, that can unlock a door for the last 20 minutes and make a big difference.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, you bring something that maybe people aren't expecting you to bring, and throw that little curveball, and it gives the defenders or the opposition something else to think about, or likewise the manager in the dugout something else to think about as well that they maybe weren't expecting from us. But, you know, speaking about the back five and, you know, maybe lending itself for an Aberdeen team that should be on the front foot. So that was certainly something that wasn't the case pretty much for the entire 90 minutes on Sunday. And, you know, as I said, you know, went 1-0 up at half time, but the second half we didn't like even seem to start to kind of assert any sort of domination. We were pretty much on the back foot straight away in the second half. St Mirren equalised through Greg Kilty, but again, VAR getting involved. There was a couple of incidences in the build-up to the goal. There was a foul, maybe those listening would think that deserves to be in inverted commas, on Jack McKenzie, but an offside call on Olusana, I think I probably murdered his pronunciation there, was brought back for that. To be honest, I was a bit disappointed in the goalkeeping for the goal as well, because I think the initial shot from Keanu Backus was pretty poorly spilled from Kel for Greg Hilty to tap home. But a reprieve for both Kel and the Dons at that stage, but a warning shot that we kind of didn't really listen to.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually wrote in my notes before jumping on that I was slightly concerned about Kel on two occasions. The disallowed goal there was a really uncharacteristic spill. That isn't an angle that really explains how he's done it. You know, is it one of them where he's like kneed it out of his own hands or something that you occasionally see? I can't really work it out. I thought he was really poor for St. Mirren's second goal as well. Sometimes goalies get beat at the near post, and we can slightly overplay this never get beat at your near post thing. I think we've all seen Ryan Hedges goal for Blackburn over the weekend, and that's near post, and there's nothing the goalie can do about that. That's just is what it is. But the second goal with Kel Roos, that it's taken from so far out that I really, really don't want a goalie getting beat at his near post from that kind of distance. And the striker made it look really simple. So yeah, a couple of warning signs. Hopefully it's just a sort of one-off from him in a game where it's quite clear the whole team were a little bit either hungover or distracted or both. But yeah, we didn't take the warning at all. I was so surprised that Barry hadn't, you know, sort of put a rocket up their arse, so to speak, for coming out to the second half, and that we seen a very different performance. We just seemed to come out and be exactly the same. It was almost as if Barry hadn't actually watched the game, and it was on, you know, he was playing Football Manager, and he'd skipped to half time, and it said his team were 1-0 up, and he thought, brilliant, I'll just keep doing the thing we were doing, and it must be working. And nobody was there to say, you know, Barry, this is going really badly, and actually, the goal was a shambles that we scored. And if you're a St. Mirren fan, you'd be furious with it. So, yeah, really disappointed. We didn't create anything. We couldn't get our foot on the ball. St. Mirren just continued to absolutely batter us in a way that I would only ever expect us to be dominated by an Old Firm team like that. You know, for us to be consistently battered in that way in Paisley was pretty disappointing, I have to say. And we just didn't seem to, at any point in the game, change our mentality, I didn't think.
No, and I agree on that. And not only disappointing, was mildly concerning ahead of obviously such a huge second leg coming up this Thursday as well. And a couple of things, obviously, you mentioned there, the way the domination that St. Mirren kind of applied to ourselves. And I thought kind of the same, the way the game took a pattern was almost like us against one of Celtic or Rangers. But we were the Celtic or Rangers in this scenario, you know, in terms of, I think probably, you know, the game that kind of haunts us all was Rangers last season when we dominated for large periods and came away from the game with nothing. St. Mirren, albeit did come away with a point on Sunday, will almost feel like a defeat in terms of the manner of the way the game ended. But also on Kel as well, you know, maybe getting those mistakes out of the way ahead of Thursday. I totally agree on the second goal as well. Hugely concerned about the concession of that. And again, going back to that point about, you know, you can overplay keepers conceding at the near post. It didn't even beat him. It goes through him. He gets kind of a hand to it. So again, I don't know if it was positioning. He does, of course, make a really good one-on-one save as well at 1-0. So we saw the good and the bad of Kel on Sunday. And I know a lot of people had a lot of criticism around his distribution at times last season, but that was kind of the first time I was a bit concerned at his general goalkeeping ability, because of course he came up big at the end of last season, penalty save at home to Hibs, crucial saves away at St Johnston, but yeah, uncharacteristic. And I just wonder on Kel how much that kind of uncertainty around the back three maybe plays a part. Obviously Joe Lewis was heavily sized at terms last season when our defence was all over the place. Just how maybe difficult it is for Kel with that back three continuously changing, and how much trust is there between him and the back three, and likewise the back three and him at this moment in time.
Yeah, it's difficult to tell, isn't it? And Kel had a few critics last season as well at times. But like you say, it was never for sort of the basic shot-stopping elements that he's generally been pretty good at. I think you're absolutely spot on. A bit of consistency in the back five is only going to make things better for Kel. I think McDonald being back in is probably a good thing. It's somebody he knows from last season as well, that he had a decent relationship with already. And goalkeepers always need a bit of certainty in front of them. They need to know what's going on, who's covering, who can track, etc. You know, Joe Lewis in his pomp, he always knew he had Shea Logan who would get back and could make those last ditch interceptions. So he never had to be a goalie that was super quick off his line. He knew what his centre backs were likely to do. He knew that Andy Considine would get beat down the left side every time there was an opportunity, so he needed to be slightly more aware of what was going on over there. So I think that's probably fair. Like all goalkeepers have these days. I think to make reference down to England, we've already seen Alisson at Liverpool have an absolute nightmare against Bournemouth this season. And this week he's being touted as the greatest goalkeeper in Premier League history. So, you know, it's one of those positions where you are genuinely only as good as your last game. And people are very quick to forget when it comes to goalkeepers. So the fact that he got away with the first one and the goal was chopped off, and then has in a way got away with the second one because we've managed to get a point out of it, which we didn't deserve anyway. It's fine. And, you know, he was good against Hacken on Thursday. Neither of the goals were his fault, and he was commanding when he needed to be. So I think he was just a more obvious example of the fact that everybody's minds were on a different game. Yeah, everybody was quite clearly thinking about Thursday, whether they didn't want to get injured, whether they didn't want to overexert themselves, whether they were simply just distracted and thinking, oh, I wonder what we're going to do. You know, how are we going to play on Thursday? How's this going to work on Thursday? I think that was clear throughout the team, but you're when your goalie's the one that's thinking like that, it's just going to be a little bit more obvious when things go wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And I wasn't, I know someone pointed out on social media that I was maybe singling out Kel, but it definitely wasn't. It was just that, as you say, kind of that when those errors are made from your goalkeeper, they become a bit more obvious. And I think goalkeepers especially is a prime position of people only ever remember your last game or your last performance. I want to just quickly touch on the defence before we come to the penalties from Sunday. A lot of people, again, making comment on Ruby's performance. Again, he as well, probably another player that didn't cover himself in glory around the second goal in terms of tracking the run of Alex Grieve. Any concerns for you around Ruby's barn?
No.
Obviously, Richard Jensen made his debut, but I think for me, on terms of Jensen, pretty much hard to judge given how poor we were in general.
Yeah, Ruby concern, not massively. Mm-hmm. And I will caveat that by saying, and so people might take my opinion with a pinch of salt, that I sort of stuck by Anthony Stewart a little bit too long last season. So I could admit to that now. But Ruby, not concerned per se. I think a few things that stand out to me is when a player comes in his first interview, he says, I'm really aggressive and I like to dive into tackles and stuff like that. You know that managers, players, refereeing fraternity, all are going to hear that as well. And you're just like, why would you say something so silly? You know, a bit like Anthony Stewart saying that he didn't think Morelos was very good last season. And you're like, come on. You know, just don't say such silly things. And to be fair, we're seeing that in his performance. He wasn't lying. He's an aggressive player, and that is going to lead to cautions. And we've seen that on Thursday, that he gets an early caution and it hampers his game a little bit. But I think generally he seems to be reading things okay. He's pretty solid in the air. He's maybe not the best at his feet, but he's certainly not as bad as Stewart was last season. Mm. And he probably is suffering a little bit from the same issues that we've just discussed with Kyle Bruce, where he needs a solid back five. He needs to know that he's got outlets such as McDonald, Nicky Devlin, McGarry, who are good on the ball. He needs somebody in front of him that's maybe not Dante Polvara that he can play, who can turn and sort of string things together. And it's just whether it's Jensen that comes in. I'm guilty of this as well, but a lot of Aberdeen fans forgetting that Rhys Williams is still at the club, and he is a player that came with a bit of fanfare and that we were really excited about. So he's maybe not quite up to fitness yet, but he's going to be challenging those guys at the back. And you know, Jensen's a full Finnish international, a current one as well, you know, not like one of these guys like Christian Ramirez that we tout as an international, but he got a couple of token caps, you know, 3-4 years ago. This guy's first choice centre back for Finland at the moment. So I think the expectation would be that he's going to come in and start, and he's going to be good from the off. So I think here's a guy that's come to a new league, a new country. He's learning his teammates. He's learning the differences in the game. And so far, I think he must have played in a different back five every game. I don't have that to hand, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was.
I guess for Ruby's, you know, the potential of an easy scapegoat in that back five, and you know, I'll say I'm maybe guilty of that myself. But interesting, you mentioned Williams. Obviously, we've kind of not really discussed what each other's notes, but I had Williams down there, and I think someone asked us that on social media on Sunday as well, was where does Rhys Williams fit into this back five if everybody is fit? Does he even start ahead of a Ruby, a Jack McKenzie? But I think I kind of agree with you there with the fact that Richard Jensen's a full Finnish international and a current one at that as well, as you rightly say, is you'd like to think that he's going to be the starting left centre back. Of that, and of course Jimmy McGarry will be hoping to nail down the left wing back role as well. So kind of really interesting to see what develops over the course of the coming weeks around us defensively. But let's move on to the two kind of controversial incidents in the game on Sunday, the two penalties. Any complaints for you around the penalty that we conceded, Angus McDonald, handball?
Nah, not particularly, not from the pictures we've seen. When I first seen it, I thought it hit his falling arm, And I was like, oh, that's harsh, because that's his arm going to the ground. And I think people are pretty familiar now that, generally speaking, if it hits the arm, that's going to prop up the body as you hit the deck, you'll get away with them. I think the fact that it hits his other arm always means that there's a risk that it can be given. And maybe slightly, my opinion on it is maybe slightly warped by the fact that we got away with quite so much on Sunday. Yeah. That I feel that's a little bit cheeky to complain about the one decision that did go St Mirren's way. So, look, for me, it's within, like, I use this phrase, like a range of reasonable outcomes. And I think it's on that cusp where if it's not given, that's probably reasonable. And the fact that it is given for me is reasonable. And yeah, I'm not going to lose too much sleep over it. McDonald didn't protest hugely, vigorously after it was given as well. I think he sort of, you can often tell by a player's reaction that he's gone up. Bollocks, that's hit my arm.
Yeah, I think he had a slight part of his chest to try and con John Beaton, but yeah, John Beaton's never going to be too much unconvinced when he's awarding a penalty against Aberdeen. He didn't lift his top off as much as Alex Gogic did, when, of course, Alex Gogic did something similar up the other end of the pitch, blocking a Leighton Clarkson shot. I thought for, you know, the one that we conceded, I personally thought was a bit soft. And, you know, I was listening to St Mirren TV commentary, and I'm not sure who their co-commentator was. I think he was a current player, but he's kind of felt it was a bit soft, because it's probably one of those that where else can that arm go in the sliding motion? I suppose they would argue the same for Alex Gogic, but at least for once in Scottish football refereeing, we saw a bit of consistency applied, albeit John Beaton had to wait for VAR to get involved to give us the penalty. But the biggest controversy was the penalty itself. Bojan Milovski slots at home, but a lot of talk on social media about a double touch. You seen anything conclusive, Jamie?
If anybody can show me a picture of this touching his standing foot, I will hold my hands up. But yeah, I have watched every single clip that a St Mirren fan has posted of either the normal angles or slowed down or screenshots and zoom ins, and I genuinely can't see it. And I don't know if any of the, so a couple of the listeners that follow me on Twitter might know, I'm a current active football referee, so I'm generally pretty middle of the road on these things, which might explain my previous view on the penalty. I tend not to get too exercised either way, and had it hit a standing foot, and fine, you know, I would sit here and say, yeah, fair enough, we got away with one, or it should have been disallowed. I just can't tell. For me, it looks like he kicks the ground, and that explains the sort of weirdness of his foot and where the ball goes. And in terms of VAR getting involved, Michael Stewart was getting, and Tomo on the radio was getting pretty wound up as well, I heard. And VAR, we've heard the phrase a million times, it has to be a clear and obvious error. And if you know, thousands of people can put clips on Twitter and you still can't see it, I don't understand what anybody wants VAR to do. That would have been a travesty for them to get involved, in. So look, if it's hit both his feet, then we've got away with one, but not, I think, through any fault of any of the refereeing staff that were involved in that game, because you just can't tell.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing, is it has to be clear and obvious. And I don't think, and I think this is, you know, potentially where Scottish football lets itself down in VAR, but obviously for us it's benefited us, is the picture quality that we get compared to English football VAR decisions is really terrible. It's very pixelated photos, and the still images are really poor compared to what you see in the Premiership. But there is nothing that I've seen to offer conclusive evidence that it was a double hit. I was speaking to a Highland League official last night who believed it was a double hit and should have been retaken. But, you know, you were mentioning Michael Stewart and Stephen Thompson, and even listening to Lee McCulloch on Sports Scene, it took him 25 minutes, he admitted, to decide that it was a double kick. Therefore, the goal shouldn't have stood. Now, you're telling me that if we want to get these decisions right, we've got to wait 25 minutes. That, I think that in itself tells you that there was nothing obvious about that decision to overturn that from being a goal. And if we've got away with one, brilliant. It's a point more than we've picked up in previous seasons at St Mirren as well. So we take it. It's not obviously the 3 points many would have hoped for, but we move on to Thursday night.
Yeah, and just to clarify there as well, it's not even that it would have been retaken. It would have been an indirect free kick to St Mirren. Yeah, so it would have been, you know, game over at that point. But I agree, 25 minutes is bonkers. Christ, there's people suggesting on Twitter that there should be some kind of countdown 30-second clock behind the VAR, and if it ticks out, then they're not allowed to make a decision anymore. Mm. Which, talk about putting additional unnecessary pressure on a VAR. He knows he's only got 30 seconds to try and work something out, as you say, on our pretty poor cameras. I think this is a great example of where improving the VAR technology might be worthwhile, because that is a game-changing decision at the end of the day. And if that went against us and it was wrong, we'd be pretty perturbed as well. So
yeah, exactly.
It is really disappointing that the best angle that we can get on that is looks like it was shot on a sort of 1.3 megapixel camera from somebody's phone in the front row. But yeah, we get away with one anyway, whether that's a double touch or not. Like, we've quite clearly got away with one on Sunday, and we've come away with a point. And I said this to a couple of friends of mine, that actually against these three games last season, we're 2 points better off than we were. They just happened to have come in a row at the start of a season, so it looks like we've taken 2 from 9, which is a poor start, but we've taken 2 extra than we did last year. And for me this year, I think we'll see what happens with Hibs and their new manager. Hearts do by no means look particularly exciting this year, and I think we'd be surprised if St Mirren keep up this level of form. And so the most important thing for me is we don't lose our away games, save for the Old Firm. You know, we pick up a point, and if we get an occasional win, great, and we make sure we win all our home games. And if we do that, we'll finish third. You know, we will finish third if we do that. And so getting a point at Livingston and a point at St Mirren, I'm perfectly content with that, to be honest.
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly given the start to the season, and obviously the kind of injuries to the defence we had at Livingston as well, and obviously the Thursday night game ahead of the game just there at St Mirren, and obviously as well, Hearts losing to Dundee at the weekend continues that any Scottish team playing on Thursday night so far this season has failed to win their follow-up game on Sunday. So, you know, European exploits are going to take out of teams, but we'll look ahead to Thursday night quickly, because I know we're both on our lunch hour doing this, and time's maybe getting away from us slightly. But as much as we might have been distracted by the upcoming game on Thursday, Jamie, against St Mirren, Haken maybe just as bad, and maybe hurting even more coming to Pittodrie on Thursday, because not only did they chuck away a 2-goal lead against us in the first leg, they followed that up with a maybe rather humiliating defeat in the derby, found themselves 4-0 down after an hour, and did come back to with a couple of late goals to finish 4-2, but I'm sure a defeat that they won't have enjoyed, and will be coming to Pittodrie with a point to prove. What's your level of confidence, level of excitement ahead of the game on Thursday?
Very excited. My level of excitement is palpable. It's through the roof. My level of confidence, I would put it at 51-49 in terms of whether I think we're going to win or not. But I'm ever so slightly in the win category just now, but it is only Tuesday, and I know fine well come Thursday that'll be 95-5 until about 10 minutes before kickoff, when it flips, and then I'm suddenly terrified that we're going to get thumped. I see nothing last week that worries me. The game and this overall tie reminds me of when we played Groningen, sort of in our early McInnes days, where I think we've come up against the side who are genuinely our level in the sort of in the round. I think that if they were in the Premiership, they would be challenging with us and Hearts for that third place. That's the sort of quality of team I generally put them at. That might be because they've lost sort of their striking and stuff from the team that won the league last season. I'm not by any means suggesting that the top of the Swedish league necessarily means that you finish third and fourth in Scotland. But I just think from what I've seen from Haken, they're an Aberdeen level team, which means, as with Hearts and Hibs, season in, season out, we win some, we lose some, and you need to show up on the day and you need to perform well if you're going to come out of that tie. So, you know, Thursday, even when we were 2-0 down, I was disappointed because I was thinking this team aren't this much better than us, and we've been in this game. And so the comeback was obviously fantastic. I thought they looked better going forward than we currently do, but I also think they looked worse at the back than we currently do, which perhaps is why it finished 2-2. And I could see a similar story this Thursday. I'm not going to confess to be an expert and suggest how much of a difference the big centre-back having been sent off is going to make. Certainly, he couldn't have had a great game at the weekend, given how many goals they conceded there. So, but we don't know who they've got to come in place. He did look reasonably imposing last Thursday, and so they'll obviously be without that. And he is their starter, so you suspect the defence, at least a certain degree, will be poorer again this week. And hopefully it's given Bojan and Duke a bit of confidence getting that comeback, and that, look, this is a team that we can get at, actually. And we know that now. And we know that we can run at players, and we know that we can cause cautions in the game that's going to make them have to think twice. I just worry that they did look really good going forward. And it doesn't take, you know, it wouldn't take much, I imagine, for that team to put two or three past somebody if they were on it. And so my instinct is it's going to be a game not where we keep a clean sheet and win it by an odd goal or anything like that. It's going to be a game where we need to outscore them. And I just hope that our attacking and creative players are performing better on Thursday than they did on Sunday.
Yeah, I was just making some kind of notes as you were giving your insight there to some of the points you made. And I think the confidence, I like that 95-5 up until about 10 minutes to kick off. I think that's how a lot of us will be feeling. I was speaking to my friend Keith last night, asking how he felt. He actually thinks that the tie could go all the way to penalties. And I don't know if many people inside Pataudry have any nails left if it goes the distance. But, Thursday night is, you know, undoubtedly our best chance of getting Europa League group stages in all the recent seasons. And, I personally would be really disappointed if we didn't get through this tie. I totally agree. I think they are a side of our level, a beatable side at our level. I kind of feel this is kind of like a game like Limassol, where I feel we should have beaten Limassol those seasons back. And I'm still disappointed we didn't do that. Of course, we've not actually been ahead in the tie as well. So if we do take the lead on Thursday night, it would be the first time we're ahead in the tie. But, you know, you mentioned about them being worse at the back. You look at the last three games, they've scored 7 goals, conceded 8. So, going on that point about worse at the back, but also good going forward, showing good examples of both there. And, you know, they went full strength on Sunday as well in the Derby game. I wonder how much they did have one eye on this coming Thursday. But when you mentioned going forward, I suppose an interesting note is Ibrahim Sadiq, the winger, of course, who scored the second goal in the first leg. It has been rumoured that a £4 million fee has been agreed with AZ Alkmaar, and he was completing medical today on Tuesday with the Dutch side. But the Hicken manager has come out to say that he will be involved and will play on Thursday night despite the fee and medical being done. Do you wonder if that's a bit of mind games? Because to me, that seems crazy to risk a £4 million move for a winger. And if you're the likes of Graham Shinney or maybe Ruby, you think, well, I'll stick one on your early doors and see how much you like it.
Yeah, and see how much you're up for it. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It just strikes me as a bit bizarre, to be honest. You know, I know it turns out, it sounds like the rumours aren't true that Bojan to Southampton might have happened at £4 million. But certainly if the news broke today that a £4 million fee had been agreed and he passed his medical, I wouldn't want him to play on Thursday. Well, maybe if it was more than four, because I think he's worth more than that. But, say it's £10 million, I'd be like, no, get him off the pitch. I don't want him anywhere near the game on Thursday if we're selling him for £10 million quid. So, yeah, slightly odd. Odd just to show your hand as well, in a way. Like, so it probably is mind games, because surely you know that surely you would assume that we think he's not going to play because you're selling him. And so if he can play, that would be almost like an ace card. An hour before kickoff, bam, our best player is actually playing in this game, and you've probably prepared all week for him not to be in the team. So, it is a strange one, which now then I think is perhaps what you're alluding to as well, leads me to think that he's not going to play because he's come out and said he's going to play, and that will be the ace card. It'll be like, haha, you've prepared for one guy and actually we're playing somebody that's just not as good. Wonder how you're going to cope with that. So it's bizarre, but he was clearly their best player on last Thursday. He terrorised us a couple of times, and poor Jack McKenzie had a hard time in the box on a few occasions. And so if he does play, that's going to be a difficult one for us to manage, and it's going to be good for them. It's obviously going to make them more positive. So yeah, I think you're probably like, probably is a bit of mind games here, but he is their best player. So if he plays, then he's going to have an influence. I just hope that perhaps we didn't start McGarry and McGrath on Sunday because they're maybe not fully fit and we were saving them for this Thursday. I really hope that's the case because I know it was only 20 minutes and I know that they were a bit tired, but they both absolutely terrorised them when they came on. And having been terrorised by them and then having been terrorised by your rivals on Sunday, you would have thought if they start again on Thursday, the Hacking players are going to be immediately concerned going into that game.
Yeah, and that's kind of the interesting point. I guess also we'll see around Sadiq on Wednesday when the squad arrive at Aberdeen Airport, if he's made the journey across. Again, kind of showing their hand early, but I wonder if MCG squared will feature from the start, McGarry in at left back for Hayes. Of course, Ryan Duncan didn't start. And if Jamie McGrath will come in for Dante Povara, for me, I would really like to see McGrath start this game. I know he's a different sort of player to Dante Povara, but just kind of that quality that he showed in that 20-minute flash in Gothenburg, I think, caused them a lot of problems as well. I think that would be probably the only two changes I would be looking to make. Or would you want to see Richard Jensen coming in for Jack McKenzie, or would you be happy to just have those two changes that I've mentioned?
Yeah. I think I'd be content with those. I'd be happy to sort of completely bow to Robson's judgment in terms of Jensen and just take whatever decision he made as being the one that was going to be the best one. I'm not a massive Jack McKenzie hater, as I know a lot of people are. I think he tries his best and he does. He generally performs well enough, and I think he suffers a little bit from the criticism that a lot of Aberdeen youth players have got over the last sort of 10 to 15 years. So I wouldn't be devastated if he started. And I think with McGarry alongside him and McDonald most likely coming into the side as well, that he would have a little bit of stability around him. So yeah, I bow to Robson on that. If Jensen starts, great. If he doesn't start, fine. I'm not going to lose any sleep. The MCG squared, brilliant way of describing them. I'm definitely going to be stealing that from now on. They're the big two for me. I feel like they have to start. And that's where if Robson doesn't start them, I'd be expecting some kind of pretty good explanation as to why. Because we discussed, obviously, at the beginning of the pod that Dante maybe doesn't elevate us, and it looked like McGrath does. And in this kind of game where it's going to be a sort of you score four, we score five, quite possibly, having him and Clarkson together, being able to play with each other and then play with McGarry and Devlin and get the strikers involved, I think can be really, really important. And he just offers a threat. And I think we reminded ourselves on Thursday how card happy European referees can be, that we're perhaps not used to domestically. It's just a different style that they obviously have. And players like having a player like McGrath and McGarry on is almost certainly going to lead to yellow cards. I'd be stunned if they didn't both lead to somebody getting booked in the game. Whereas Dante doesn't, he's not somebody that's going to drive past people and create any issues in that respect. So, I think those two definitely. Any others, I'd be happy to wait and see.
I think I agree there. Yeah, and that MCG squared just kind of came to me when I was writing down their two names. So I'm not going to claim that it's been some sort of mad idea. But yeah, I think McGrath as well adds that bit of creativity. You're absolutely right, along with Leighton Clarkson. Duke, I think a lot of people are forgetting that Terry kind of caused that Haken defence in the first 45 over in Gothenburg as well. Even though he's not scoring, he is a distraction and he is a threat that will take the defenders' minds elsewhere and the likes of Bojan Miolski. But I think I'm maybe more 60-40 in terms of my confidence at this present moment in time, and more so the more I speak about the game. And I'm sure when we hear more previews of the games and hear Barry Robson speaking in his press conference tomorrow as well. But Jamie, really, I really appreciate you coming on to Red Tinted Glasses today at such short notice. Really, really enjoyable chatting to you, and really good insight as well. Some people tuning in might have heard of your podcast, the Late Kickoff Podcast, but for those that haven't, please tell us a bit about it and where they can find it.
No, thank you very much. First of all, also, thank you very much for having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure. And any chance to chat about the Dons for an hour is a welcome one. So delighted. Yeah, our podcast, it's the Late Kickoff Football Podcast. It's English Premier League focused with a splashing of Aberdeen news at the end, because I can never resist. And also Dunfermline Athletic, which is an interesting combination, but my co-hosts are both Dunfermline Athletic fans. So you get the Pars news in there as well. We record weekly and we generally release the show sort of Wednesday to Friday, depending on what's happening in England that week dictates when we record. But yeah, Spotify, Apple Music, all the regular podcast places. And we were delighted to find out today that we are the number one football podcast in Guyana. So that is fantastic. So if anybody is listening to this also from Guyana, check us out, because we seem to be popular.
I love little cool facts when you get the chartable update and find what random country in the world you're sitting in. I love that. But definitely make sure you check out the podcast as well. If you have been watching this video on YouTube, remember to hit the like button, hit subscribe if you're new to the channel, and get that notifications on, because regardless of what happens, win or lose on Thursday night, I will be doing a live watch along of the group stage draw, reacting live to who we face from both Pot 1, 2 and 3, and then previewing the game on Sunday against Hibernian with Michael Monin. But Jamie, once again, really appreciate your time on the podcast, and we'll see most of you on the next episode. Thank you for tuning in. Sports Social Podcast Network.